Well, in our morning services, we've been working through the Sermon on the Mount, and we've got to the last lap, the very end of the Sermon on the Mount. And you'll find this in Matthew chapter 7. I don't have a chapel Bible here, so I can't tell you the number. Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. If someone's got with a blue chapel Bible wants to call out the page number, that may help some to find. 972. And not completely by accident, I have to say, we're landing on a very appropriate text for this particular occasion. So let me pray and then we'll read it to you. Heavenly Father, we pray that these words of Jesus Christ would, by your Spirit, become words of life for us, on which we are able to build. Amen. Matthew 7, verse 24, the section headed, "The Wise and Foolish Builders." "Therefore, everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. Yet it did not fall, because it had its foundation on the rock. But everyone who hears these words of mine and does not put them into practice is like a foolish man who built his house on the sand. The rain came down, the streams rose, and the winds blew and beat against that house. And it fell with a great crash." When Jesus had finished saying these words, the crowds were amazed at his teaching, because he taught as one who had authority and not as their teachers of the law. On the 17th of August, 1999, at 3 a.m, an earthquake struck the city of Izmit in northern Turkey. It was the largest earthquake in modern times and caused widespread devastation. Over 200,000 people were made homeless that night, and 15,000 people are thought to have died. A great many apartment buildings collapsed like packs of cards. Yet others, right next door, stood firm. Particularly noticeable across that devastated city were the towers of ancient minarets on the mosques. Can you see on this picture here? Some of these ancient mosques were built centuries ago out of old-fashioned bricks and stone. And the minaret towers look delicate and pencil thin. Yet they're standing apparently untouched by the earthquake, surrounded by this tangled mess of modern concrete and reinforced steel. These thin towers had survived, while the apparently robust modern buildings had not. Where would you have chosen to be during an earthquake? Inside reinforced concrete or at the top of that minaret? The buildings didn't collapse because there was anything wrong with the designs of them. They collapsed because they'd been built on the cheap. Poor quality work and materials, without proper foundations or reinforcements, without proper planning or thought about what they were being built upon and what would happen when the ground shook beneath them. Jesus wraps up the Sermon on the Mount by calling upon us all to think about our spiritual foundations and to consider the difference between what will stand the tests of time and what will not. It's a good text to finish on for our 150th birthday as a church. What has allowed this church to last for so long? It was never a foregone conclusion that it would. What would allow this church to survive for another 150 years? That is not a foregone conclusion either, by any means. But it also prompts us to cast our vision wider and look at our society and nation. What kind of spiritual foundations are we building on together now as a nation and as a society? Will we survive when the floods come and the rain falls? And it calls upon us as well to narrow our vision and look at ourselves, at our own lives too. What kind of spiritual foundation have you and I got in our lives? The difference between a building that stands and a building that falls is not what you see on the surface. It's not superficial size or strength or materials or artificial reinforcement that makes the difference. It's what's underneath, beneath the surface, that counts. So let's ask Jesus to come and be our building inspector. We'll ask him three questions. Why do we build? Where should we build? And how should we build? Why do we build, first of all? We build because we know that one day it is going to rain. We know that in life there will certainly be storms and difficulties. There will be times of testing, and we need a refuge. Human beings and societies need a home, don't they? Emotionally and psychologically and spiritually, as well as materially. We need something secure and strong in which we can take refuge and comfort when events that test out the foundations come along. Now, we understand that very well in some respects, don't we? In this country, we are fortunate to have a good system of building regulations and inspections. And because of that, that means that we are putting our final touches on our home extension over a year later than we planned and expected in the first place. Because where we wanted to build our extension goes over a large Anglia water sewer, we discovered to our joy after buying the house. In order to build there, we have had to have a special steel reinforced foundation built. If Anglia Water need to get at their sewer, the whole end of the building of our house can be completely undermined and it won't fall down. It will just hang there, suspended in space. So the engineer assures us anyway. I sincerely hope that we never have to find out whether he's got his sums right. But if you ever feel an earthquake coming, come along and stand in our extension. You'll be all right there. Now, all this extra work has gone into the foundation of our extension for something that we hope is only a theoretical possibility. Hopefully, it will never happen. It will never have to be undermined and suspended in space. And isn't it odd? Because we can be so wise in preparing for possibilities like that that might come along, especially when they involve money, yet so foolish when it comes to certainties. The trouble is, we tend to do our thinking and our building and our planning on sunny days. You can bet that when the foolish man in Jesus' story was choosing his site on the beach for his summer gazebo, the sky was blue, the lake was calm, the skylarks were twittering above him. And he built a house that was airy and shady, yet he thought was good and strong enough to stand for 364 days of the year. Whereas the wise man kept in mind, as he sweated with his pickaxe and his concrete mix, that there would be a 365th day as well. There will be times that really test us and try us. At every level. It applies to our country. Our nation has gone nearly 60 years without a major war or similar crisis like it to shake us. All of the events in Iraq have, in terms of the number of British troops being killed, been less than the average day during the Second World War, haven't they? We've hadn't had anything like that for 60 years. Maybe we fool ourselves that nothing like that will ever happen again to test us out. But it will, one day. And I worry whether we have the national foundations, the strength of character anymore to stand when the times of shaking and testing come. What do you think? You could ask it about the church as well. There was a time when people assumed that the Christian church was a solid, secure institution and that it would always be there. But over the last 100 years, there's been not so much a sudden storm or earthquake, but a slow, gradual shift, a turning of the tide in our society against the Christian faith and assumptions that people took for granted. Now, if you look on from the outside, as a lot of people do, they very often overestimate the decline. Because from the outside, people see an institution crumbling and numbers falling and think that the whole thing is about to fall apart. That's often because they have no real personal experience of the real thing, of real live Christian faith on good foundations, with love holding it together. And they're surprised to discover that not only does it exist, but it's also looking to grow. But on the other hand, if you happen to be fortunate enough to be part of a healthy and growing church, you might look around a foolish auditorium and underestimate the problem because it all looks all right. But the gradual changes in our society are testing the foundations of all churches. What's more, now we live at a time when it's relatively easy to be a Christian in terms of trial and persecution. One day the wind will blow harder against us. We should be prepared for times when it will be really hard to be a church that sincerely believes and follows Jesus Christ. So churches need good foundations too. But what about our own personal life? The modern lifestyle is built upon a fantasy. It offers us a fantasy, and because we like it, we're all too ready to swallow it. The fantasy is that life could and should be a long summer's day. That you can set it up so that most of the time that is what it's like. For some of us, it is. Much of the time, anyway, life is pretty good. We have worked things out in our world now that if you are well off materially, if your health is good, if you have a busy and active outlet for your abilities and talents, if you have satisfying relationships, then life is good. And it's quite possible to fool yourself that it will always be like that. And maybe some of us do that right now. We fool ourselves that because life is good now, it always will be. For others of us, of course, it is already raining in our lives. We've already had the bad news, the shaking and the storms. We've already had a bomb dropped on our playground. But then the fantasy of our society means that we look at that and we feel cheated and confused by our bad experience. This really shouldn't be happening, we think. I shouldn't be expected to deal with this. We conclude that what we've been through is freak weather. We think that sunny should be normal. That's what we can expect. So, that means if I just hang on through this freak weather, it'll be all right in the end. All I need is a new relationship that works out when the other one didn't. A financial windfall to sort out those debts that have accumulated. A medical breakthrough to solve that health problem that besets us. And then it will be, once again, one long sunny day off into the distance. That means that even then, even so, we have bought into that fantasy. We have bought the myth. Even if our own temporary experience has denied it, we still believe in our hearts that it really ought to be sunny all the time. But Jesus makes it clear that rain is normal. Rain is normal. And we have to be ready for it in our lives. We are sinful. We live in a fallen world. Nothing is quite as it should be anymore. Everything is spoilt. Because we live our lives at odds with God rather than in harmony with Him, we can still enjoy so much of His goodness, yet at heart there is a fundamental discord. And the storm clouds and the earthquakes of life, the broken relationships, the illnesses and breakdowns, the tragedies and the sorrows and the stresses and all the bad news is actually more normal than the sunshine. It actually reflects the spiritual realities more clearly. And just suppose that in the end, even if we are spared major crises in the course of our lifetime, we face one very big one at the end of it, don't we? We all face death, whether we confront it consciously or not. And when we die, we stand before God and must give an account of ourselves and of our lives and of the foundation upon which we have built. And when we face God, our foundations will crumble and everything will fall apart if we have not lived with Him. It wasn't a surprise that there was an earthquake in Izmit, you know. It was well known that it was going to happen. That whole part of the world is always moving. In 1963, there was an earthquake to one side of Izmit. In 1967, there was an earthquake to the other side of Izmit. So all the geologists in the world can tell you that there was going to be one in the middle as well. The laws of physics said it had to happen. It was all building up. But he didn't know when. And so it's not going to happen today, thought the dodgy building contractors as they bodged the job and scarpered. We all know that we're going to die one day. Maybe that hits us from time to time. Like me as a teenager, laying there at night, listening to my own heartbeat. And I knew the laws of heaven and earth said that one day that heartbeat was going to stop. Oh, hard to take on that reality, isn't it? But I knew it was going to happen. I knew it because I'd seen it happen to one person on one side, as it were, and another person on the other side. But it's not going to happen to me. Not tonight, I thought, and rolled over to sleep. You can only do that so often, can't you? Or maybe not. Maybe now you seek out a place, you seek out a method of building your life that can stand that greatest earthquake of them all, the greatest storm that can come along. We need to build. And we all build whether we know it or not. The question is whether, not whether, but where that building takes place. So where do we build? We need to find spiritual foundations for our lives, bedrock. The Anglia water pipes were not the only problem that our extension suffered, you know. One Friday afternoon, Suzanne came home to find a couple of very depressed ground workers sitting idly on their digger. That wasn't that uncommon, actually, but they were a bit more depressed than usual. "We've got a big problem," they said. "We can't find any hard ground here. We've gone down a whole extra meter, and it's still all sand. We can't build here." Now, Suzanne did really well. I had a really, really busy weekend coming up. It was Jonathan's dedication or something like that. And she didn't tell me that whole weekend. Such self-discipline. Instead, she got on the phone to our structural engineer friend. And he arrived like the cavalry on Monday to sort it all out for us. "It's soft," he says, "but not too soft. Don't dig deeper, dig wider. Spread the load out and it will be fine, I promise." And that's rather like our world today, isn't it? The world says, don't go deep to find something firm. Go broad, go wide, take in as much as you can. We're struggling to find our bedrock for society in our lives. And in spite of the standard of living and technology and knowledge and sophistication, we're lost and adrift in the sand. The ground shifts beneath us. We don't have a foundation to build upon. So in our society, we respond by becoming wide and shallow rather than going deep and firm. We try to take in as wide a spread of philosophy and religion and morality as we can, pick and choose what we like from that spread, and don't rely too hard on any one thing, because we don't think anything is trustworthy these days. The trouble with that is that what works with building our extension on sandy ground does not work with building your life. Because the storms and earthquakes of life and death are much worse than anything that might hit fallow fields close in this foreseeable future. Sand isn't good enough for life, however wide our footings. We need the rock to rest upon. And that's what Jesus Christ and his teaching provides. He can be trusted and relied upon. His teaching is 100% true, 100% reliable, and 100% relevant. And all the shaking and undermining that has happened in our society has not shifted the truths that he taught one little bit. In fact, I think if you look at our world today, you see the value of them. If you want a proper foundation for life and for faith, Jesus is the person to turn to. And the Bible is the place where you find him. Now, if you're not used to these things, don't be deceived by the decline in Christianity that we see in our society. It doesn't mean that that foundation is any different. For a start, if you look at the world more widely, the church is exploding with life and growth. And where Christianity does seem to be shrinking back in certain small parts of the world, well, you find that the parts of the church that are experiencing the really drastic decline that shows up on the figures tend to be those that rely either on their own church traditions and become fossilized, or upon human thinking and philosophy and drift off and become wishy-washy with nothing much to say anymore. The churches that are surviving are those that remain square on solid foundations in the Bible, and yet are always willing to change themselves in order to become more true to Christ and to relate to a changing world. I'm going to take a brief pause here. Does that help? Okay. That's the Have you lost me altogether now? Right.
Somebody bring me this?
Okay. Apologies for that. Can you hear me now? Take this off. Right.
So that's the principle that we aim to have at the heart and the life and the ministry here at this church. God knows how well we manage it. Or not. And even if we have managed it and do manage it, there's nothing for us to boast about. The reason why we need it to is because we are weak. If we've survived 150 years, if we survived another 150 years, it will not be because we're better people at Surrey Chapel, because we're cleverer and stronger and more spiritual Christians than anyone else. No, exactly the opposite. To survive as a real Christian, you have to know how feeble and silly and unspiritual you are. And just how much you need to rely on Jesus for the firm foundations in life. What does actually happen if you or I build upon the rock that is Jesus? Well, it normally shows up in your experience in life. Being a Christian does not mean that you do not go through life's problems. It's not a way to stop it raining. In fact, it's one way to guarantee that it does rain from time to time. Being a Christian normally means, though, that you have a strength and a resource to see you through the storms that come. But I want to emphasize here that Jesus is not ultimately talking about how we feel when we go through bad experiences. I don't want to portray it that way. Because I know plenty of Christians who have felt decidedly rocky and wobbly in times of trial, and plenty of others who are not Christians who have borne difficulties with great courage and fortitude. Jesus is talking from the ultimate perspective of how your life will stand up at the end of it all, how it will stand the test of eternity. And so with that thought in mind, can I ask you how secure your footings are to face that day? Have you got something solid to base your eternity upon? How do you know what is right and wrong? How to make your important decisions? How do you find strength in times of difficulty or anxiety? What can you be confident of? Forgiveness and relief when you know you've gone wrong? Where do you find comfort when the rest of the world has let you down? But most of all, what gives you hope when it stops? What gives you hope that when that stops, things don't just fall apart? You will not give a foundation that gives you hope in this world without God. Because it is all sandcastles. Some of them with concrete and steel reinforcements on top. But it's all sandcastles. Listen to what Jesus Christ says to you. We find it in the Bible. Believe it and trust him. And when you find the rock, build upon it. For it really matters how you build as well as where you build. Notice what Jesus said. Everyone who hears these words of mine and puts them into practice is like a wise man who built his house on the rock. And notice that the foolish man is not someone who does not know what Jesus has to say. The foolish man stands for everyone who knows what Jesus says, but doesn't put it into practice, but doesn't actually do it. It's not enough to simply hear it and ponder upon it. It's not enough to agree that it's true and nod your head. You can't survive a storm or an earthquake while sitting on a fence, you see. You actually have to do it and put it into practice. That means believing in your heart. It means saying with your mouth. It means demonstrating with your life and actions. It means sharing it in community with other people. It means actually doing something together with others that seems strange and risky, but ultimately bears fruit. You'll see someone getting baptized here next week as the first stage of that. Maybe that's something you need to think about. Let me give you an example. Yesterday was another significant birthday. Our oldest member, Dorothy Spellman, was 95. And wouldn't she have loved to be here with us this weekend? But she can't get out anymore. So some of us took a little communion service round to her flat on Thursday. Dorothy is in constant pain. She can hardly see. She had a stroke not that long ago. And her body is so old and tired. And you imagine that a gust of strong wind could blow her away like a leaf. She seems, as you look at her, to be more fragile than when she was a little baby. I reckon I could pick her up almost as easily as if she were a little baby. Yet without a doubt, in all the ways that really count, she was the strongest person in that room today. For the rain and the storms have blown upon her life. The ground has shaken around her. But Dorothy's house has stood firm and strong. Maybe like that ancient, slender minaret, standing strong in a city of collapsing concrete, looking so much more fragile and delicate, yet able to survive when the rest fell down. We asked Dorothy what we could pray for her. Well, she said, I would really like to share my faith with the folk here. I often try to talk about the Lord, but I'm not quite sure what to say next after I've started. Please pray that the Lord would give me courage to share my faith with others. Wow. Will you be praying that when you're 95? Go for it, Dot. That's why she's not wobbling, you see. Because she hasn't just heard words and theoretically believed them. She puts them into practice and wants to live them out and do them with every breath that she has. And when the earthquake shook, it was not the modern concrete slabs that stood the test, for they were built by cowboys on sand. When the earth shook, it was the ancient stone, pencil thin, yet built by wise men on the rock that survived. Let's make sure that we spend our lives building to last, building with faith in Jesus Christ.